We have so many traditions. For example, Imam al-Kazim alayhi afdalu salatu was salam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, he says, Rajabun shahrun azim. He says, Rajab is a great month. يُضَاعِفُ اللَّهُ فِيهِ الْحَسَنَةِ, that Allah multiplies good actions that are done in it. One action any other time may lead to 10 rewards. In Rajab it is amplified, multiplied. Yeah, whatever we do in this month, it adds more success. And there are many things that we can do in this month of Rajab. Things that you and I can do in this month, like ghusl. Take out ghusl. We get a tradition from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. He says, man adraka shahra rajab faghtasala fi awwalihi wa awsatihi wa akhirihi kharaja min dhunubihi ka yawma waladathu ummuh. He says that one who meets the month of Rajab, yeah, enters the month of Rajab and does ghusl on the first, in the middle and the end of it, he will be forgiven or she will be forgiven of their sins, and they will be as if they had just been born by their mother, free of sin. Yeah, free of sin. And so, easy opportunity to have our gunas forgiven so that we can benefit and create our akhirah.
Rajab, Rajab, هل علينا واقترب رجب رجب هل علينا واقترب يا مرحبا شهر رجب هل علينا واقترب شهر كريم وأصب الرحمة فيه تصب شهر كريم وأصب فالرحمة فيه تصب الصوم فيه مستحب من صام يوما من رجب أعظم أجر قد كسب.
Something else that we can do in this month of Rajab is fast, right? We get tradition, the one that we continued from Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam, where he continues and he says, "Man sama yawman min Rajabin." One who fasts one day in the month of Rajab, taba'adat anhun nar masirata sana, that the hellfire will distance itself from that person by the distance of 1 year. Yeah. It's a really interesting hadith, right? Because at that time, like, how was the fastest transportation would be like a fast horse, maybe, right? And however far the horse would travel would be in a year is the distance that fire of Jahannam would be distance. Today you take like the fastest jet, and whatever the jet can travel in a year, that's how far. It's not contextual in the sense that it's only referring to the ride of that time. And then he says, وَمَنْ صَامَ ثَلَاثَةَ أَيَّامٍ, and whoever fasts 3 days in the month of Rajab, وَجَبَتْ لَهُ الْجَنَّةِ, the Jannah would become wajib on them. Allah is giving us chance to construct our akhirah, to plan for our akhirah, so that when we meet Him, we are ready to receive our akhirah that we had developed. Many other things that you and I can do in this month. Istighfar, do as much istighfar as possible. And there are traditions behind all of these. Sadaqah, give sadaqah as much as you can. Recite as many extra prayers as we can. Recite the Holy Quran as much as we can. Recite any adhkar, dhikr, yeah, salawat, anything that we do. And of course, if the places of ziyarat and umrah were open, then going for ziyarat and umrah in Rajab cannot be compared with other months as well. These are just some of the things that we can do. This is an amazing opportunity, the month of Rajab is. But we have to plan for it. You know, we have to plan for it. Not only plan for it with the intention that I want thawab, thawab, thawab. That can't just be the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is that I want to plan for my akhirah. And my goal in akhirah is not just the thawab. My goal in Akhirah is closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I do these things because God tells me He loves these things. I plan for my Akhirah because Allah tells me He loves those who plan. Yeah? And so I do these things. But at the same time, my brothers and sisters, as we develop our Akhirah by doing these things, it is important that we don't ruin our Akhirah at the same time by doing things which are haram. And so while I am planning, I am also planning to leave behind my vices and leave behind my sins and leave behind my anger and leave behind my frustrations and leave behind my temptations so that I can purely plan without destructing my plan. Pray for my family and I in the month of Rajab. I will pray for your family, inshallah, and you in this month of Rajab. And together, inshallah, very soon, we will come back to our centers and be together to celebrate the great events that are taking place in this month.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
Has a famous sentence saying that our controversy is pointless, meaning what if all of us are following religions of Allah, we should not disagree each other.
So this library is one of the most notable and important activities of Mr. Falaturi.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Ourselves, what will we say in front of it?
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
As you know, the program, The Teacher, is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim scholars, thinkers, philosophers, jurists all across the nation of Islam. And for today's discussion, we want to talk about an outstanding Persian Shiite philosopher, a Muslim we can say, Shiite philosopher by the name of Abdul-Jawad Falaturi, who dedicated his life, in fact, into spreading the Islamic philosophy, Islamic hikmah in Germany, and he's famous for his services to Shia Islam over there. Okay, Abdul-Jawad Falaturi, Sheikh Ziyaniya, give us some information about his early life.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dr. Abdul-Jawad Falaturi was born in 1304 in solar calendar in Isfahan, famous city in Iran. He was born in a religious family. He graduated from a German-Iranian school in Isfahan and then moved into Mashhad to study Islamic studies beside the holy shrine of Imam Rida alayhi salam. And because he was interested in philosophy, he took his major, his main major in Islamic studies as the philosophy. Mm-hmm. And in a way that even he was nursing one of his teachers, I mean Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani, rahmatullah alayh.
Okay.
After studying philosophy with some great scholars like Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani, that he gave, Mirza Mehdi gave him a permission, a written permission that is giving very, privilege and, high-ranking, titles to Marhum Falaturi. Then he moved into Tehran and studied in the University of Tehran for 3 years and got his bachelor in philosophy. And after that, he moves to Germany to continue his studies and researchers in philosophy especially.
Okay, that's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Ziyaniya. For sure, the school that he attended when young, when a teen, the Iranian German school had role in learning the language Germany, okay, and then moving to the country Germany over there. So he moves to Germany and continues his studies, also his teachings over there. What is his main method of teaching over there?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Actually, when he graduated from Köln University, so he got or obtained this position in the university as the professor. So when you are obtaining this position, you will be busy teaching in this university, another university, being engaged with your students. And all these activities are included under the topic of scientific activities.
Yes.
But we have to keep in mind that Professor Abdul-Jawad Falaturi, besides being a philosopher, he had this concern for preaching and spreading Islam as a religion. That's why we see that one of the great Shia library founded in the Europe is entitled under his name.
Okay.
So besides being a professor, he was really active in the field of tabligh and preaching and spreading Islam. And at that time, because of facing Islamophobia and people were not familiar with Islam and they had misunderstanding and misjudgment about Islam, one of the main concern for him to remove these misunderstanding among native people of Germany was to establish a movement in order to change the textbook of the youth, specifically students of the schools.
Yes.
I mean, before they get into the university.
Okay.
Because he was aware of this point that wrong information will mislead people.
Okay.
So definitely as a general subject or general topics, in the high school or in the elementary school, students will get to know about different religions all around the world.
That's
and
right.
Islam is one of those religions.
Okay.
So he was aware of those information being placed in their books, in their textbooks. So one of his main concern was to change the textbook of a foreign country. You see how ambitious he is.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes even in our country, when we see something is going wrong in our textbook for our children, we are not ambitious enough to take such a risk to start having a group of people starting on working on a proper textbook for our children.
Yes.
But he, as a professor, as a dignified person,
yes,
being engaged in scientific activities, he had this concern that since they do not being fed by good information about Islam, mm-hmm, they are going to grow up on those bad or wrong information,
yes,
and they will be misled.
And was it only on religious studies or all the books? You know, I mean, in
mainly on the, not the religious,
okay,
as I said, religion is one of the topics that,
mm-hmm,
students will go through that.
Yes.
To get to know about,
okay,
the religions,
yes,
all around the world,
mm-hmm,
Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So his main concern was to change the textbook,
okay,
of the children,
uh-huh,
of a country far from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So he was really ambitious.
That's all right.
May God bless him.
God bless him. And maybe sometimes we have to correct the understanding of some of the people about the basic beliefs of a religion like Islam, especially the Shiite Islam, because we know that so many books that are available in the Western countries are based on the Orientalist findings, most of which might be a wrong portrayal of the beliefs of the Muslims or Muslim lands. It's better for the Westerners or the Western academies in order to learn it from the people who are specialized in this, I mean the Muslims themselves. And the case of language over here is also important. I mean, somebody like Abdul Jawad Faraturi had mastered over German language, so he could renew this type of idea. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the foundation of a library over there, which is really important for an Iranian, you know, to found a library about Shia Islam in Germany, which is very famous nowadays,
yeah,
the place of the visit to so many people, scholars and researchers all across Europe. What is this library exactly?
When he was living in Germany, he felt this necessity that the resources of Shia school of thought must be transferred into Western culture and Western, you know, research atmosphere. So he himself decided to establish a specific library that is dedicated for Shia school of thought. And as you mentioned, this library is still active in,
mm-hmm,
Germany.
Yes.
So the story is interesting because he wanted to transfer these books from Iran to,
yes,
Germany. There is a long way.
More than 4,000 volumes, they say.
Yes.
It's difficult, okay.
So he loaded these books on the truck.
Oh.
And, you know, they moved all these way by a truck.
Okay.
And they placed the books in the library in Germany.
So it was a road journey.
Yeah.
The books from Iran over there, okay.
So, and most of his works were not done by, you know, we may say governmental aids.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was,
yeah,
using some aids by, you,
yes,
know, donations or help of some of his friends or by his, you know,
yes,
own efforts. So this library is one of the most notable and important activities of Mr. Falaturi. Another important point about Marhum Falaturi is that he was amongst the members of the High Council of Islamic Affairs of Al-Azhar University in Egypt.
Okay.
And it's also very important that a Shia scholar living in Germany is acting in a way that Al-Azhar is inviting him to be a member of that High Council. This is very important.
That's all right.
So Mr. Falaturi was not only, you know, dedicating and specializing his activities in university.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes scholars are only, you know, we may say, are unifying their activities in a single way.
Yes.
Mr. Falaturi was trying to broadcast,
yes,
the message of Ahlul Bayt,
yes,
alayhi salatu wasalam, in,
okay,
every different means that,
yes,
he could. Establishing library,
yes,
correcting the books,
mm-hmm,
talking with people,
yes,
having dialogue with them,
yes,
in the academy that,
yes,
he established.
Okay.
So he was active in,
yes,
every field that he was feeling the necessity of being active.
I think Falaturian belonged to a generation of the people who believed, we can say, completely in religion of Islam, in Shiite Islam and religion beliefs, by trying to spend their time and, we can say, efforts at the university and the academic level. We have this beautiful generation of the people among the scholars of Iran. So many great names are over there. Dr. Jafar Shahidi was one of them. Dr. Gorgi Another one was one of them who got permission of ijtihad from outstanding ulama of Najaf.
Even Dr. Ja'fari Langerudi.
Yes. And so many other people, you know, who were not clergymen at the first look, but they spent, we can say, their life on theology, Islamic beliefs, and so on, especially in the European countries. Okay, anything missed, Sheikh Mahtavi?
I think this is good to know that obtaining such position in university enabled him to co-author many works
Very good.
With the great scholars of the Western universities, specifically GMA universities, namely Monika Truschka, Herbert Schultz, Braunschweig, Moritz Destorg, Hans Wecking, and Hans Zirker, and other scholars.
Yes.
So we have to take this into consideration. When we look at the topics of his works, it has something to do with Islam, establishing dialogue in Islam. So it shows that, as you, to your brother, mentioned, having this open-minded understanding of Islam, trying to sit around one table with the representatives of other religions, understanding them, extending this borders, I mean the religious borders. He has a famous sentence saying that our controversy and disagreement, meaning that including the followers of Abrahamic religion, he is saying that our controversy is pointless and meaningless to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Meaning, what if all of us are following religions of Allah or the Abrahamic religion, we should not fight with each other. We should not disagree each other, although there are differences, what we have to sit around one table. And these activities and this open-mindedness enabled him to get this position in Germany, as I said, to be given this chance to have some modification on the textbooks.
That's all right.
Yeah, this is very important. Okay. And also we have to keep in mind, besides all these activities, I mean, including the academic activities, being engaged in philosophy, he was really giving the most important focus on Quran. He has also another famous sentence saying that throughout spreading and preaching Islam in Germany, the only thing I was referring to and I was referring people to was Quran.
Okay.
So actually he was really upset about our distance with Quran, saying that why we are that far from Quran and the noble teachings of Quran. These noble teaching will draw people on the right path of Allah.
Okay.
So this is also interesting.
And that's why even when he was invited by the University of Mashhad and the University of Tehran to teach philosophy in there, he said, if I come to Iran again to teach, I will teach Quran and Nahjul Balagha, nothing else.
Very good. That's all right. So many books have been written by him in both German language and the English language, you know. Most of them focus on the religion of Islam. He was really a source of benefit for so many Western scholars and researchers who want to be familiar with Islamic philosophy, Islamic theology, and Islamic aqaid and beliefs. He was over there in Germany, in Köln, and then in Hamburg, you know, with founding the library. And maybe so many of the books that are available in the libraries of the Shiite world are not used by the people of those Muslim land themselves. You know, this is the good story about those people who are interested in a dedication. I mean, dedication of the book from a Muslim land to a non-Muslim land can be the source of khairat, barakat, and blessings, you know, for them very much. This is a good action, and I think Falaturi was really great in this world. It was a winter at the age of 71 in 1337, according to the solar calendar. He passed away in Germany. His body was taken into the city of Isfahan, the city that he was born, and he was buried in a grave by the tomb of Haji Aga Rahim Arbab, another great outstanding mystic Islamic philosopher, in the city of Isfahan. May Allah bless his soul. And thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyainia.
You're most welcome.
For being present in the program, the teacher talking about Abdul Jawad Falaturi, the outstanding Muslim Shiite philosopher in Germany. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com. /Ian Call of Islam page, also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode and introducing another Shia dignitary. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhor in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Electrical cables are an essential part of our lives. Cables bring power to our homes and offices, countries, and continents. They channel power and signals that make equipment hum and engines run, from oil rigs and broadcast studios to cars and trains, commercial buildings, and factory floors. Cables keep information flowing, facilitating a non-stop stream of words and images that transcend speed and geographical limits. In this episode, we're going to talk about the vast world of Iwan's wire and cable productions. We wanted to see who makes these items and why they are so important to numerous industries across the country. Plus, we will check out some of this industry's contributions to the national economy. To become more familiar with wire production, we visited Behta Padideh Alborz. It began its activity 5 years ago in the field of production and distribution of wires and cables. This company makes dozens of different types of wires and cables. Some are used in telecommunications, construction, electrical appliances, and automobile manufacturing. It also makes more complicated cables, such as coaxial cables. This type has an inner conductor surrounded by an insulating layer that is covered by conductive shielding. Currently, its production facilities have the capacity to make millions of meters of cables each month. Some 40 people work directly at this company, and 200 others are indirectly employed. It manufactures cables through a process of pulling either copper or aluminum cords. Advanced machines are used to stretch the metal conductors to the desired width. After this, depending on the use, the strands are either braided together or aligned and prepared for insulation covering. It is worth mentioning that this company has been producing wires and cables that were previously imported. Its productions have gained a significant share of the domestic market too. Such domestic productions have prevented large amounts of capital flight throughout the years. It might be interesting to know that 95% of raw materials needed to produce wires and cable can be domestically supplied. Because Iran is rich with natural resources, raw materials such as copper, aluminum, and petrochemical products are easily accessible to this industry. There is a small number of items that still need to be imported, such as sheath required for aluminum cables. One of the advantages of this company is its diverse product range. It also has the capability of producing special types of cables to meet specific customer requirements that may currently not exist in the country. Remarkably, a key competitive advantage of this company is its technical know-how and experience. This has helped it manufacture its production machines and equipment and localize this technology in the country. Using its own machines has other benefits too, such as being able to maintain and control the quality of their products. Quality issues are very important in the cable industry. This cable manufacturer follows stringent specifications for the quality and safety of its wires and cables. Products are checked in the quality control center for their performance as well as to match other standardizations necessary in the sector.
It's important to have the highest quality because wires are meant to last for years and sometimes for decades. Therefore, this company uses the highest grade of raw material to produce its items. As part of its future goals, this company is adding new products to its portfolio, such as fiber optic cables. But that's not all. This manufacturer stands on the cusp of exporting its products and plans to expand its market reach to neighboring countries as well. Generally speaking, the country's wire and cable industry has witnessed exponential advancements over the years and has been developed in line with modern technical knowledge. Based on statistics from the industry, Iran produces more than what is needed for domestic consumption, so export-oriented production is an important aspect to keep this industry thriving. The National Wire and Cables Producers Association says over 80% of the country's needs are supplied domestically and productions compete in quality with global brands. But the association says that exports are negligible compared to the large production outputs. Moreover, it estimates that Iran has the potential to sell at least $600 million worth of goods to neighboring countries annually. Yet the value of current exports is less than $100 million. So why is this? It's because this sector is only working at 30% of its entire capacity as it faces several obstacles for expansion and development. Industry participants say they can work at full production load if many of these challenges are removed. Increased production can also lead to more exports. Some of these challenges include the supply of machinery. More often than not, business owners are forced to go through multiple intermediaries to get the equipment they need. Doing so is time-consuming and adds to their costs. Other issues revolve around export barriers such as Iran's tariff system. Industry analysts say this system has inflated the end price of local products, sapping the country's competitiveness and exportability. Manufacturers say strict government regulations have also led to many businesses foregoing the path of exports altogether. The biggest consumers of wires and cables in the country are in the telecommunications sectors and electrical power industry. Electricity is the mother of all industries and is heavily dependent on wires and cables. Iran is capable of producing large amounts of electricity and fully supplies domestic needs. It exports electrical power too. This sector requires high voltage cables to be able to distribute electricity nationally and also internationally. According to the Electricity Industry Syndicate, domestic firms already produce high-voltage power cables and are ready to export their goods and services to international markets. Previously, these cables were imported, but domestic production has reduced imports by 20%. As the country develops its manufacturing industries, it also creates an enormous demand for electricity. The national power grid has been expanded by 60,000 kilometers in the last 4 years to meet growing requirements. Consequently, manufacturers had to set up production to supply wires and cables to the electrical power industry. We looked at some figures from the National Power Generation Transmission and Distribution Company. Data showed around 80% of the productions of wires and cables in Iran is supplied to the power industry alone. The remaining 20% are used in electrical appliance, automobile, and construction industries, among others. It can be said that wires and cables play an important role in the electrical and electronic industry. The increasing demand for power, light, and communication has kept demand high for wires and cables. This industry has so much potential, promising a bright future for further development and growth. Iran has many natural resources. Some are agricultural and some other are natural wonders enjoyed by tourists and locals alike. Still, other resources have to be extracted by mining.
The mining industry is a very important component of the economic health of Iran, contributing billions in a given year. This modern industry is also heavily dependent on the discoveries and innovations made by knowledge-based companies. These firms are often pioneers of development, opening new horizons for industries while making industrial processes more efficient and less costly. One of the biggest capacities of Iran is its rich natural resources. Yes, we are talking about mines. They have brought tremendous profits while creating numerous jobs. This week, we will look at the mining industry and some of its related trades. We also want to uncover how this industry continues to expand and who is helping with its development. So let's start the show. Everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. Offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops, tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country. The platform is called Bita. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector.
Beta digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFTs that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next time for another edition of Bazaar.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. As always, I have the honor and pleasure of being joined by my darling sister and special guest, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. How are you, my dear?
I'm very good, thank you. So, I don't know which part of the world you guys are on in. I'm a firm believer of living your life, not caring what others think, and not necessarily...
You're a believer of this?
Yeah. And
you don't give a fig?
No, I really don't. Not waiting for external validation. And I believe that living up to other people's expectations of us is somehow toxic for everyone. But...
So how do you know if you're doing the right thing?
Whether we like it or not, we are social creatures. Right? And there's a certain degree of norm that we kind of have to abide to in order to be able to live a harmonious, relatively peaceful life and be able to have healthy relationships in general. And as Muslim women, we're not an exception. I also cannot deny that there's a great amount of double standards, you know, directed toward the Muslim community when it comes to the society's expectations of a Muslim woman and a Muslim man. I don't want to turn this into a battle of genders. It's really sickening how almost every social topic in this world turns into a battle of genders. I'm not in any way a feminist at all.
I can see that.
I'm a justicist. I want justice.
Okay.
Right? We talk about society's expectations of a Muslim lady. And then I want to talk about how fair these expectations are.
How fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
And whether or not they're realistic.
That's a very good expectation.
Whether or not they have the same expectations from them. Well, maybe they don't, because men and women have totally different responsibilities. But do they hold men to these standards, as high a standards as they hold women? Because if they don't, yeah, because if they don't, then the society is going to be lopsided, right? And it's going to be dysfunctional, and the women are going to turn dysfunctional, and the men are going to turn dysfunctional, and the world will be chaotic, and it will burn as we see it now today.
Actually, last night I was reading this book, this really nice book that I'm falling in love with. It's called Identity of Iranian Men in the Area of Qajar and one more era, which is very close to this era. And it talks about how the definition...
It's a Farsi book?
Yeah, it's a Farsi book. Actually, my professors in university introduced us this book. And since I'm in love with gender studies, men's identity, I got this book and I'm reading it very carefully, like line by line, not like novel reading. I'm reading it like analytically. This book actually talks about who was considered as a good man. And he talks about...
Back in those times.
Back in those days. About 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A century ago.
Oh, the world has changed so much
right,
since.
Right, exactly. And it talks about the concept of Javan Mardi or chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says that, like, how in the passage of 2 or 3 decades, this whole definition changes, right? Like, it was actually saying that it doesn't really matter from which walk of life you are, whether you're an aristocrat or whether you are down there.
Right.
Doesn't really matter. There were specific criterias or standards that if any man had that, like protectiveness of the fellow men in his neighborhood, fellow men and women and children in his neighborhood, being caring about them. Mm-hmm. If he saw like someone bothering them, he would come to the rescue. The other one was generosity and kindness. It reminded me the qualities of Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
That even sometimes it was written that they would raid caravans that were coming like from Russia, that were going all the way to the Qajar king, a caravan holding a lot of gold and silver and gems and jewelry, and they would stop them. They would distribute the money and the goods among poor people in the neighborhood.
Fascinating.
Would you believe that?
We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you again for joining us. We've been talking about some really interesting stuff.
Sometimes, Zainab, when we're watching cartoons and when we're watching animation movies of... the Disney, right, like the Aladdin,
yeah,
or Robin Hood, any of these, they have like a very, they're coming from real backgrounds. Although they are made dramatic.
Art imitates real life.
Exactly. Basically. And I didn't believe that until I read history.
True, right? Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm just saying that, and so at one stage of time, this is how a good man was described. Later on, when you move into history, because your question was that we have double standards for a Muslim lady. Last night, the pages that I was reading was about how the men, like athletic men, who was considered to be an athletic man physically and ethically. Mm-hmm. And like in the about 120 or 30 years back, mm-hmm, when men used to go to the zurkhanas, mm-hmm, right, where only men came. And there was no place for... Even now, the zurkhanas are not a place that women can attend in Iran, right? So ethical qualities were super important as one of the main characters of a champ. As we move on in the era of Qajar and after, where rich people came into the... They bought their own zurkhanas, they built their own zurkhanas. And so physical strength, like in the zurkhana, you stay still and you do your exercises. After 20 or 30 years, you had to move. Motion was something very important, and physical structure became one of the positive standards, one of the very good qualities that that an athlete should have. Mm-hmm. But 20 or 30 years back, it wasn't really important if you had like if you were, you know, built muscles, broad shoulders, yeah, yeah, muscles. It wasn't really important. Ethics was very important. Mm. Nowadays, Zaina, when you're looking at sports and when you're looking at athletes, ethics does not play any role. Mm. Very, very skimp, small, trivial role that it's not really important. What's really important is what you wear and how you are. Mm. Like your height, your muscles, your weight.
And your skills on your, the field.
Exactly. Mm. So you're right. But we have to see that, and this is something really bad that has been happening, and this is going on in women's sports as well.
There was so much on my mind in my bed I lay. I turned to my side and I heard a voice say, stop all your whining, heart rate's declining, you've got so much more.